Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I'm hopeful that 2021 becomes the year that the Pac-12 pivoted, right? Among other things, I saw some data today about the positivity rate in our state. It is in a free fall, per the Oregonian's Brad Schmidt. We've had multiple successive days where that positivity rate has just dropped and dropped and dropped. It is reaching it's at its lowest average since early November. So that is all positive. That is good. I'll take it. Joining us from California in a big-time part of the Pac-12 footprint, John Wilner, Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News. How are you, my friend?
I am good. How are you?
Doing all right. Doing all right. What's the situation there and the feeling there about the virus and the vaccine in the Bay Area?
Well, you know, definitely different than L.A., right? Our outbreak in the Bay Area has not been nearly as bad as it has been in L.A. and even in the Central Valley. It's not good. It's the worst that it's been, but still relative to a lot of other places, it's manageable. There's certainly a lot of frustration about the rollout of the vaccine and, you know, for instance, Kaiser, you know, big healthcare provider, they just sent out an email. I got one the other day, just really pessimistic email about the vaccine supply for them. And, you know, I think it's going to take another 4-6 weeks before at least in California, before the vaccine rollout really kind of hits high gear. And then hopefully by the time we get into April, it'll be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, we've got Kwiatkowski leaving, Pete Kwiatkowski leaving Washington for Texas. You've got Andy Avalos leaving Oregon for Boise State. I couldn't help but think about Mel Tucker leaving Colorado for Michigan State and Mike Leach leaving Washington State for Mississippi State. And seeing some of that movement, John Wilner, is there any big conclusion that you can draw, or do we have to take these case by case?
Well, probably a little bit of case by case. I mean, Avalos is going back to become a head coach at his alma mater, right? So that's a little different to me than a situation like Kwiatkowski, where he probably wants a change. He's been in Seattle for, 8 years now. Wants a change, and he's going to get paid a lot more money. And Mel Tucker, going an Eastern guy, going back east, getting paid a lot more money. So there are certainly situations where the Pac-12 is losing coaches because it just can't pay as much. It doesn't have the resources, and that's a huge problem. But not every case. You know, Leach, my guess is Leach probably wanted a change too. You know, your head coach, Washington State for 8 years, whatever, you want to change. But the resources is certainly a huge issue.
Wilner, the programs in Washington and Oregon are facing hires here. What kind of coordinator do these programs need? You know, at Washington, you got Jimmy Lake, it's the head coach. At Oregon, you got Mario Cristobal.
Right. Well, certainly I think that Oregon's hire is probably a little bit more significant for the Ducks overall than Washington's, only because the Oregon head coach is an offensive guy. So, you know, whoever he hires is basically the assistant head coach or the head coach of the defense. Whereas for Jimmy Lake, you know, I'm not sure you could call Washington's defensive coordinator the head coach of the defense because of Lake's background. So it's a little different there. They're similar in that, you know, both vacancies are taking place when the units themselves are good or at least well-stocked with talent, right? It's not like there's going to be a major rebuild in either Oregon or Eugene or Seattle on the defensive side, right? There's a lot of talent for both units. Exactly what type of coach they need, you know, kind of is a little bit more about the system that they want to run and the personnel that they have. And in that regard, it's not quite the same. But I think you're looking at, you probably want a veteran coach. You got veteran units and you're thinking about a division title and it's not a rebuild. You're not trying to bring somebody in who's going to, you know, produce in 3 years. You want somebody that is going to craft a great defense in 8 months.
We've talked on yesterday's show about Cal's defensive coordinator, Tim DeRuiter, who, you know, has been speculated to be a target of Oregon possibly. It is, like, how would that play within the conference, a coordinator jumping from a place like Cal to Oregon or Washington?
Probably not great, especially within the division. But, you know, that kind of thing happens. Oregon has rated they rated Washington State staff when Leach was there like 3 years in a row, right? And it happens. It would be up to Cal to do what it took to keep him. He's a good coach, too. It didn't work out as a head coach at Fresno, but he is a good defensive coordinator. You know, that is the level that Oregon needs to be shooting for. But I don't think that there would be a huge amount of backlash at that level. We've seen it happen, you know, plenty of times in the past.
I'm watching college basketball, and I'm really surprised. I think I misjudged how difficult it would be to avoid having cancellations. I thought smaller roster sizes, this is going to be easier. And as it turns out, it's a greater impact when you lose two or three players to a team, and sometimes you can't play a game. What do you make of the Pac-12's effort to get games in? And as we march towards March Madness, it looks like this is going to be dicey into March.
Very dicey. I mean, I kind of figured it was going to be a tough, right? I mean, it also doesn't make as much sense to me, basketball, because of the indoor nature. I mean, there's more face-to-face, close contact situations in basketball than there is in football. And you lose, you know, you got 3-4 guys in quarantine, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're going to have a tough time fielding a roster for a particular game. I am not surprised that they're having as much trouble as they are. I don't see how it's going to change much in the next, 7 weeks or so till the tournament. And this is why they have, you know, they got plan B, C, D, and E in terms of creating mini bubbles if they need to. And the reason that they have scheduled these little hidden cushions within the schedule to allow them to play makeup games. You know, the Arizona State game, for instance, they were supposed to play the last week of the season. That game got moved up to this week so that now both teams are free the last week to play other makeup games. So, I mean, it's definitely like a chessboard for hoops. And it, you know, it just makes sense in terms of the close contact nature and the limited rosters. We'll see if they can get through it.
Help me out with this, because I look up and there's an 11 a.m. tip, and there's a 4 p.m. tip, and there's a 2 p.m. tip. What's going on with tip times?
I don't know. It's crazy. I mean, there's like, some of it has to do with if you've got to play 3 games in a week, they want your first game to be as early as possible to help you with travel and recovery. But I was not prepared for there to be, a bunch of Thursday games at 2 o'clock. I think some of it has to do with the TV situation, and some of it has to do with, you know, I think, you know, creating cushion for them in case there's a delay, in case they have to get officials, you know, what if an official tests positive and you got to fly in another official, you got more time. All of it, I think, is designed to just give them as much cushion as they can get. But it is weird having these games. You know, you look up, it's 2:30 in the afternoon on a Tuesday, and there's a Pac-12 basketball game going on right now.
What are they going to do with the tournament? Because I talked to the Big Sky commissioner yesterday, Tom Wistersill, and he says they're going to Boise. And then he sort of tipped me off that the NCAA tournament has told teams that you have to have 7 consecutive days of negative tests. You have to be clean for 7 days in order to go to the tournament. So not just in their conference, it won't just be the conference champion. They're going to have a backup team or two that has also had seven clear days in case somebody can't go as their automatic bid. What is the Pac-12 going to do with, you know, more than one team that gets into the big dance?
Well, yeah, it'll depend. They'll have to, you know, the tournament winner will get the automatic bid. If they can't go, they will designate an automatic qualifier. But presumably, you know, the team that loses in the conference tournament finals would be headed to the NCAA anyhow. Yeah. So it's not an extra spot being taken up, right? That would, you know, that's a different calculation. But it'll be interesting to see how the whole thing goes down in that regard. And logistically, as far as I know, the Pac-12 is still planning on that same, you know, same weekend as scheduled in Las Vegas. But the NCAA is, you know, with their schedule of the tournament that got released the other day, it's clear, you know, they're preparing for that seven-day gap, right? Because first-round games aren't starting until, what, like Saturday or Sunday, right? They're having the first four on, what, Friday or Saturday, and then first-round games are on Saturday, Sunday, and the Elite Eight's on a Tuesday. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah, I think literally the coaches are going to have to look at the players and go, look, if you want to be part of this tournament, you got to stay in your hotel room. You can't go out because I could foresee with that timing you just mentioned that there could be a team that wins its conference tournament and gets the automatic bid and then has to sit like for a few days. And what happens if they have a positive test on Wednesday or Thursday? Suddenly they're out and somebody else is in. I think it's going to be messy, Wilner. I know they want to do it all in Indianapolis, but I also I lived in that state. There's a lot of real estate between West Lafayette and Bloomington and Indianapolis, and I hope those kids stay in their rooms.
Absolutely. And idle time is the enemy of competition. I mean, we saw that during the college football season. Teams that had weekends off, I mean, in the SEC, this was a big problem. You have weekend off, the kids go see their friends and family, and that's when they bring the virus back to the team, right? I mean, I think that there was at least one or two Pac-12 teams that had that issue where family functions for holidays or special events created outbreaks that caused cancellations. Competition is best. You can't let them be out and do the things that kids like to do because they're going to get it somewhere.
You know, I am railing on the Pac-12 officiating and really looking at the Pac-12 officiating going, I really hope they figure something out. What is, in your opinion, the biggest thing or two the Pac-12 could do between now and next football season to help make the officiating better?
Well, I think that they have to take a look at the leadership. You know, David Coleman is in charge of Pac-12 officiating. David Coleman has been a on-field official in Major College Football for all of two games. He's been in charge of the Pac-12 now for, what, about 5 years? I think that that is certainly an area where Merton Hanks, the new football operations chief, he's got to take a hard look and see if Coleman is the guy that they want in charge of this operation, and if Coleman's approach to recruiting, training, teaching is what they want. I think that, you know, I'm not saying that they should necessarily or will make a change, but I think that that's a spot that's got to be evaluated thoroughly. But more generally, they have got to recruit better coach. I mean, it's just like a team. You got to recruit better officials, and they need to focus on officials that are in the western half of the country, and officials they got to train them, and they got to improve the overall product. But it's a lot like having a team. You got to look at the head coach, and you got to look at recruiting.
John Wilner, Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News, is with us. The Pac-12 programs that are sort of jockeying for position for next season, a lot of them looking back at this season going, you look, we got some competition out of it, but I don't feel like they're putting too much stock in it. Like maybe fans are doing the same thing. They're kind of going, well, Oregon fans, be happy you won the championship, but I don't see a lot of people too worried if their team didn't perform very well this last season. Who do you think has the opportunity to take a big step forward in the Pac-12 football-wise?
I think that ASU and Utah are both very well positioned for next season. You could kind of see it, too. Both had big trouble early on with the virus and cancellations. But once they kind of got healthy and were able to get into a little bit of a routine, both of them finished very strong the last couple weeks and built some momentum for next season. I would put the two of those probably at the top of my list in terms of, you know, who to watch, who could make a big jump. In the North, you know, I'm not as sure that there's a big jump to be made. I think Washington and Oregon are the two favorites, you know, and they finished at the top of the division this past season. Cal may be able to make a jump, you know, just because it's going to have its, you know, guys available on the lines of scrimmage. But to me, it's ASU and Utah would be the start of the, you know, or the top two for big jumps.
You know, I look over at the SEC, and you know, obviously there's more competition there. I think we could say that. Mario Cristobal, I think, was smart to stay in the Pac-12. I think he is the best recruiter in the Pac-12, and I think at Oregon he'll have some inherent advantages in the Pac-12 conference. Who do you think's the best game coach in the Pac-12? You give everybody the same talent, Wilner. Who do you like?
You give everybody the same talent. It's interesting because some coaches would do better with certain types of talent, right? Like Kyle Whittingham isn't necessarily going to do great with a Washington State talent, which is built, you know, Washington State's talent is basically built for the one and shoot of the air raid, which is the opposite of what Utah wants to do. So it's a little, you know, it's a little tricky. But, I mean, for my money, in terms of who does the best year in and year out with what they've got, I would probably say, I mean, it's probably Kyle Whittingham, you know, just their consistency. In terms of the game coach, like just making smart calls in-game, giving his team a chance to win the game based on how he manages it. Boy, that's tough. Maybe Justin Wilcox. I think they do a good job of playing, you know, giving their team a chance to win in terms of the decisions on fourth down, field goals, all that kind of thing.
John Wilner, you're the best. I appreciate you making time for us. I want you to have a good day. Stay safe out there.
Thanks for having me, my friend. I'll see you.
There he is. You can read him now on Oregon Live, among other places. Follow him on Twitter, at Wilner Hotline. Coming up, the big splash. It's the one thing you need to know today. O'clock hour, we'll go to Seattle. Jason Puckett, KJR Radio in Seattle, will be joining us. I join his show every now and then. He'll be coming on my show. We'll talk about Washington, Washington State, Oregon, the Pac-12, other things. In the news today, Blazers game against Memphis knocked out due to COVID contact tracing. Apparently the issues with the Grizzlies, not the Blazers. But that game is off. NBA says the game's postponed. But that's not our big splash. And by the way, not either is our big splash the fact that Patrick Mahomes practiced today. He was 100% participant in practice. Looks like he's going to be good to go for the AFC title game. But that's not our big splash either. What is it? Well, here it is.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where? Down there.
Must be the big splash. Brought to you by the Exergen Twice Daily Thermometer.
Philip Rivers is retiring from football. 17 years as a quarterback in the NFL. He was with the Colts this last season after the previous 16 were spent with the Chargers. He said today in a statement that playing in the NFL was a childhood dream of his. He's 39. He never made it to a Super Bowl. It's one of the few omissions in his resume, but he's fifth in NFL history with 63,440 passing yards. He's behind Drew Brees, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Brett Favre. He's an 8-time Pro Bowler, also 5th in the league with 421 touchdown passes, again, behind Brady, Breeze, Manning, and Favre. He said in a statement that he wanted to announce his retirement on January 20th. The Roman Catholics' feast day for St. Sebastian, who's the patron saint of athletes. He wanted to do that today. The announcement also 13 years to the day after he played with a torn ACL in a playoff loss to the New England Patriots in the AFC title game. He says January 20th is a special and emotional day. How about Inauguration Day, Philip Rivers? It is St. Sebastian's feast. It's the AFC title game. And now he's announcing his retirement on January the 20th. Look, there's never going to be a guy, a heck of a guy, like Philip Rivers doing what he did at the level that he did it. I think it's a shame that he never got to a Super Bowl. I think it's a shame that he never won a Super Bowl. But he's just one of those great quarterbacks who piled up numbers and won a whole bunch of games and loved to play the game. Looked like he was having a great time. Also one of the best trash talkers in the league. But he said it was just time. He won 134 games. That is second among quarterbacks that do not have a Super Bowl ring. It's amazing. So you got Dan Marino in front of him without a Super Bowl ring with 147 career wins. Only Brady, Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Drew Brees, Favre, John Elway, and Dan Marino won more regular season games than Philip Rivers. He retires today on this January 20th and calling it quits. I like what he said, though, it just being time. I don't think that it's such a simple concept that it's just time. Think about that. It was enough time. It was the right time. Think about how much power that feeling holds, because there are a lot of athletes who retire too late, who hang on too long, who can't get the ball down the field if they're a quarterback, or can't get to second base in quite the same time if they're a base stealer, or can't cover as much ground if they're a middle infielder or outfielder. Philip Rivers is not going to be one of those guys. He kind of knew what to do when he needed to do it, and I think he serves as an example of a player leaving at about the right time. That's our big splash. It's one thing that you need to know. Patrick Mahomes playing. By the way, Patrick Mahomes, I did not think for a second was going to sit out the AFC title game. I just don't know if the Chiefs will utilize him in the same way that they utilized him in the last round of the playoffs. That's a big question. I'll pay attention to that as that game kicks off. We'll talk about it in the 1 o'clock hour. Plus, we've got great sound and punch and audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.